Mastering Success, Unlocking Insights from the World's Elite Achievers with Stephen J. Manning. And we are going to dig into this topic, starting with some realities about elite achievers in all disciplines and aspects of life, both professional and personal, and obviously, you know, in all areas of commerce, sports, business. I think it's a real privilege, as usual, Steve, to speak to you. And this is a very big topic that we're digging into here.
Thank you, Nathaniel. The pleasure is mine entirely.
So where do we start here, Steve?
Well, just a side note. What a way to start a talk with a side note. I think that to be in the presence of greatness is one of the most amazing experiences, privileges of a lifetime. And if you ever have the opportunity to do that, exploit it, look, seek it out. And by the way, in terms of greatness, just so be clear what I think of greatness. If you tell me that this, you and I are together in some city, Nairobi, New York, London, wherever, and you tell me that there's a guy over there who is acknowledged as the best shoe shine guy around, people wait in line because he is the best shoe shine guy. Without a doubt, I'm there. I am going to make a point of going there because I need to learn what makes that person so elite, what makes them tick, and how do they do that on a sustained basis? What do they bring to the picnic to make them that elite? Side comment. You know, I mean, first of all, I think that we need to acknowledge that some realities of life, that most of the true elite achievers have capacity. Capacity, define it any you want to. I think a capacity is, again, what they bring to the picnic, brain power, resolve, all of that stuff. The thing that people shrug their shoulders, roll their eyes when I say this, is that I need to understand that everyone has some degree of capacity in something, in some ways. The problem with most people, and by the way, capacity, I think of it both quantitatively and qualitatively, most people simply do not mine for that, do not explore that. Capacity, the real achievers have what it takes to explore their own capacity and push their limits.
Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
And leverage what they do have. There's some things that these achievers have in common. You and I talk about this. We've done talks on this. Part of my philosophies of life, the true achievers, to them, life is not a dress rehearsal. They see opportunities now. They live now. None of this soft stuff in the future. I'm going to do this sometime. I want to do this. I will think about this. I will write this. I will. I'll run a 10K. All those things to me are Swiss cheese without the cheese. The achievers, the elites, live now to go forward. Another thing they have in common, another one of my precepts in life, is never consider failure an option. The real achievers wake up in the morning poised for success and achievement. They never start out with the potential of failure. Gee, why bother? This could fail. That does not exist for them. Finally, in just philosophies, they absolutely aim to outthink and outwork everybody else. Some of the true elites that you and I know, we are fortunate to know some, and then we read, listen to, really do outthink most people. They just do. They can, and they want to. And one of the other things they have in common is they just outwork everyone else. You may not be able to outthink everyone else, but you can certainly try to outwork them. That's kind of the sort of basis. And then we can get into, we've identified just a half a dozen things having to do with attributes of the world's greatest achievers. So it's up to you which one. We have a list of determination and focus and discipline and all of that, and confidence, adaptability, and and more. So we can talk about any one of those if you like, to whatever extent you wish.
Yeah, I mean, before we dig into these, I want to talk about how athletes visualize success. They visualize scoring that goal. They visualize throwing the ball in the hoop. They visualize running faster than anyone else has ever run before. And I really truly believe that that is possible within business as well, and all areas of life. Visualization, and I'm not talking about visualization as in, oh, well, it might happen and some vision board and this. I'm talking about literally in your mind, scoring the goal, making the sale, hitting the home run, shooting that hoop, whatever it is. But literally, I'm really interested in that. And I think that there's a lot to be said for actually visualization in terms of just taking the time of actually thinking, okay, what's going to happen? What does this mean for me? And actually visualizing the moment of success, that actual specific moment when you make those 1,000 sales, when you push that button, as one example, on your paid advertising, as one example.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's visualization coupled with discipline. Okay, because visualization can't be just pie in the sky.
Yeah,
can be dreaming. Oh, by the way, real achievers do have dreams, but they're not dreaming of the absurd. They're dreaming of the possibility. So I think visualization is very, very powerful. You know, it's a funny thing. Some of the greatest athletes on earth have psychiatrists in tow. In fact, some of the, you know, I'm well versed in things like tennis and skiing, racing, and so many of the top performers have traveling coaches. These are, without a doubt, mind benders. They help them visualize a good performance. And you visualize running it faster, visualize hitting that forehand a little differently. And when you do, this is what's going to happen. And when you can combine it with discipline and they actually do it, that's when you build on it. You see? Visualization work. If you see yourself a failure, that is absolute train wreck. That's why I keep saying failure is not an option. If you consider failure, congratulations, you just embarked on a train wreck. Failure is never an option. Success is the goal and the only option. And if you don't visualize it, for the truly successful, that is part of the ordinary goal setting. I mean, here's my goal. Okay, I'm visualizing that moving forward, that success. You don't want to do that? There are many opportunities to make a living doing something else. There's a lot of great jobs that are ordinary, but the great achievers have a different focus. They have that goal. And that's not pie in the sky. That's not walking on Mars for most. Well, Elon Musk is different, but for most it's not walking on Mars. But you know, you're right. Visualization is incredible. It's also a fantastic mind exercise. Mm-hmm. Hello. You're about to go out on a first date with that awesome woman you met, that awesome guy you met. You know a little bit about them. And now you have to think about, how's that going to go? Oh, just jump in a pool and you'll find out later if you can swim. That's not going to work out. But you can visualize, and as I know it's happened to you, happened to me, visualize that meeting ahead of time. Now, I'm visualizing what's going to happen. I'm visualizing what I need to do. I then do a bunch of homework. And then I take that to, this is what I need, this is what I will do. And these are my expected benefits from it. I pretty much walk into that meeting, if I've done the right homework, visualized the process, I pretty much walk in there, I'm done, and I walk out saying, I had them beat before I walked in. Imagine that as a way of life. And I've seen some of the very best perform at a level that's astounding. Of course, they have the capacity, and they also have done the work, and they could not conceive a different outcome.
But doing the homework with regards to everything, it alleviates a lot of stress. And I just noticed that earlier today, because I'm doing a bit of decorating at the moment, and I'm not really that into decorating, if I'm perfectly honest. I'm into the finished product, but I don't particularly like the steps, right? And I looked at my kitchen ceiling. What's that? You can relate to that, right? Many people can relate to that, right? So looked at the kitchen ceiling, and I was just completely overwhelmed with the holes and the edges and just everything in that room. I look at the ceiling and I'm like, oh no, really? Is this what the guy did before? He didn't finish it, right? So I went to Gemini, and I couldn't believe the in-depth DIY knowledge that Gemini had. It actually blew my mind. I took pictures of the ceiling and I was like, okay, so what do I do here? What do I do there? Do I do this? Do I do that? Can I put an edge that's a different size on one side and then match up with the other corners? And Gemini was like, yes, you should do that. That's the best way to do it, and hide this piece of wood that's there and just cover it over. And I was like, because I'm not a DIYer, right? Like, it's just not my thing, yeah? And, well, it hasn't been, because I didn't enjoy it when I was married, right? But actually, it's quite enjoyable now. And I think it's funny how you can just sort of be determined to do something. And that determination, whatever happens to you along the way, you've got your goal, right? And you might get thrown off at some point during the way. There might be things that come along, because this is life. Life happens to you, right? But if you stay focused on your goal and you are determined to reach that goal, you will get there, right? Like, that's how I'm looking at it.
Well, two comments. First of all, I don't really want to get into what that fantastic computer in Wichita Falls, Kansas, or wherever the heck your Gemini box happens to be. I don't want to know what that one thinks about your wife and marriage. That's way outside my competencies. and there's a lot of things that we do because we have to. A lot of things we do because we want to. There are a lot of things we do because we're compensated to do them. That's the life of a writer, for example. Writers write for three reasons. They want to, they have to, and then bottom line is, I'm getting paid. I must do this. But you're talking about focus, and to tie it into the two elites, which is the bottom line topic of what we're doing here, the world's elite, the achievers. And you talk about focus. Now, it's astounding to watch those people operate. They have an unwavering clarity on their goals, and also the path to get those achieved. Oh, by the way, I will talk about resilience and adaptability as well if you want to. But they have the unique ability to block out extraneous distractions. The laser focus that pushes all the mind benders and time wasters away. If I may just give you a simple example, because it occurred to me watching an F1 race. I think it might have been Kiki Raikkonen, one of the all-time greats. He drove this Formula One race, 190 miles, I think, about 75 laps. There are 18 turns per lap. That is, I don't know, 200 gear shifts. Now, he was disqualified. Why was he disqualified? Every lap he drove was within maybe a second of the mean. He hit every turn, 78 laps, exactly the same way. By the way, he pure visualization coupled with just reflexive work. He, my process turned 12, understood the speed, the turn and the turnout, gear shifts. The focus part is what blew my mind. He completed the race 78 laps wanted. And now 300,000 people screaming. Everybody's screaming in his ears. Ah, excitement. And he goes by the checkered flag. And then a couple minutes later, he was disqualified. Why? Because when you get past the checkered flag, you need to slow down to about 60% of your speed. Otherwise, you're going to rear-end people. Because the race continues without you, and people are trying to catch up on it. Slow down. Get out of the way. Notwithstanding the screaming in his ears, notwithstanding people going by, the man drove the next lap at the same exact speed, same turn, same everything. Focus. Wow. Some people think that's called a zone. I've seen the zone in business people executing a deal, negotiating a deal. Talk about focus. A great story about this because I'm amazed. This guy lost the race, by the way, because he didn't slow down. You know, I mean, just it's pretty amazing.
Incredible. He must have been
And that
annoying.
Goes together with discipline. Wow. You know, focus, discipline, visualization, and the incessant need to repeat the same action because that's how you achieve the goal. It's phenomenal stuff. And discipline, a big topic. What do these people have in common? Every one of these people has discipline in common. It doesn't matter how eclectic Branson might be. Doesn't matter how eclectic Musk might be. Oh, I'm going to Mars and create a colony of people because we need it. Because Earth is going to be extinct in 100 generations. I promise you, all the bravado notwithstanding, they have the discipline to perform. They just do. Oh, well, you know, Branson is just going to get on a balloon and go to Mars. No. No. It seems like if that's not true, he's a very disciplined guy. And so are, you know, so are all the great achievers. There's discipline. And the discipline is interesting. And you and I talked about this as well. It's you commit to goal. You create it. You commit to it. You commit to how you're going to get there. Oh, by the way, you do have flexibility, your adaptability. Without that, you're going to break. Things change. You attack it with total commitment, all the resources. And by the way, for these people, anything they attack is 24/7, 365. It's not, oh, gee, it's a weekend. It's a holiday. So now they pursue their goals maniacally, but they do it with the brain fully engaged. They don't take shortcuts. Unnecessary shortcuts, because you know impatience breeds really poor outcomes, and
yes,
they all recognize.
Mm-hmm. That's something I want to dig into, actually, the impatience, because it's like it's a very difficult one, right? Because you want to achieve something, and I think you need a certain level of impatience in order to do what it takes as fast as you can, because that impatience kind of drives the speed, no? Or am I just adding hyperbole to this conversation?
No, I think that there's a distinction between impatience and ambition. And, you know, we talk about you only cover yourself as far as your blanket reaches in terms of finances and so on. There's a very big difference between ambition and impatience. You know, I really do want to swim the English Channel. Now, if I'm a really quality swimmer, I understand what that takes. I understand the training regimen. I understand the body conditioning I must have. And then I will swim the English Channel. I'm not going to jump in the channel and hope that I'm going to be able to swim it. Because I'm just a great swimmer. No. It's not going to happen. You need to prepare. You need to be focused on what you're going to do. And which takes me back to what I think that all the great achievers, the elites, they really recognize the realities of their own lives and competencies. Okay? They create the pace within those boundaries of what they could do, how they're going to do it. And they do find their own comfort zone. Now, their comfort zone may be here, whereas mine is here. But their competencies, abilities, whatever heck it is, just ability to live is over here. But, you know, also, it's interesting. People start out to do something and are going to become great at a career. A lot of the elites planned that from birth. Oh, heck, Stephen King was going to be a writer when he first started to talk. Foregone conclusion. You know, read about Elon Musk. Who knows what he's going to become when he was a kid? How many times did he change course? You know, he was always a thinker, but what he does now, without a doubt, is quite unique. And then you look at, you and I talk about athletes because you're a quality athlete. I'm a broken down old jock. Think about how many of the best athletes on earth started out in other sports. Just to recognize their path when they hit that proverbial fork in the road. I was watching the ATP tennis from Rome. Imagine if Jannik Sinner, who is the best player in the world today, and he's destined to be iconic in time, as long as his body holds up. Imagine if he decided to just be a really good skier instead of soon to be iconic tennis player. You know, imagine if the best authors in the world would write only when inspiration and the mood strike. Only in the movies does F. Scott Fitzgerald sit around for 3 years hoping the muse will strike, hoping for divine intervention, and then write The Great Gatsby. Seriously? Now, don't do this, but I promise you, you pull the best of the best, top of the top, the most successful writers alive and dead. And by the way, if you can interview them, please let me know. I'd like to be your agent. They approach writing the same discipline as when you have to do the job, the 9-to-5 job. You know, they get up in the morning at the same time. They take a shower, put on their work clothes, go to that specific part of the house where they work. And then they work. They write all day. None of this inspirational stuff. And I'm astounded when I had the pleasure to talk to a couple of these people. Oh, no, no. They plan these 15-minute coffee breaks. And they plan a lunch break, never more than an hour, disrupt the brainwaves, and then they quit at 6, dinner time. Good man, that's like a job. Oh yeah, it absolutely. And then of course, then take it from everyone that writes for a living. Of course, after dinner, you might just sit down and pull a few all-nighters, you know? But the discipline, the focused, quick story. I think the best commercial writer I knew, Nick Schick, is a phenomenal advertising writer. Now, our paths were very much intertwined for a long time. It's the point where he's not feeling well, he's challenged, oh my God, all this stuff going on. And then the phone rings, and it's the biggest bank in the world. They're about to send out a letter, a big package with 20 pieces of paper to 27 million cardholders, and they forgot the six-page letter that talks about what they do, how they do, what they're going to do. The Pope idea. Here's the letter, and this is why we got 20 more pieces of paper, and you need to act on this. John, we need that. When now? John is about to commit suicide for various reasons, and then being the master elite, he turns to the keyboard and starts writing. And it's lawyered and it's in print by midnight. And he says, it doesn't matter if I'm suicidal, homicidal, I have to be very, very good. And now, you and I have been writing on demand for a long time. When one of your friends, perhaps your best friend or partner or someone important in your life, makes that panic phone call that says, Steve, I have a problem with Attorney General of X state. Okay, what you do? Not the point. Here is the 12-page letter, demand letter we just got, and we must respond to it today. And I say, this, you got it today and you have to respond today. Well, that's not true. We had it for 10 days, but we must respond by close of business today. Maybe you might have called me earlier in the morning or yesterday. We drafted something and it's terrible. You need to redraft it, please. Okay, I don't know what the issue is. I don't really know that attorney general. I know I knew several, but not that one. And nobody gets attacked quite that way without doing a little something wrong. What choice do I have? You sit down and write. No, no, no. I don't compare myself to the elites by any stretch. But to watch all those people pursue what they do maniacally with such clear focus, and they marry that with a tremendous capacity they have. Oh, by the way, I need to make a quick statement here about all of these people, all the elites that you and I talk about, read, listen to. They're all committed students, not just practitioners, they're students. All elite performance in any discipline, any, pick one, shining shoes, splitting the atom, sending people to Mars. They're all hardcore committed equally to their craft as they are to their vocation and avocation. I brought up, your friend Branson. That is a man equally committed to his vocation and his avocation. All of these people.
Funny though, I was listening to him the other day, actually, talking about when he started Virgin, the airline company. And it really did make me smile. I think what it was is that he was fed up with, he basically was going somewhere on a flight, I think down to the islands in the Caribbean, and British Airways cancelled the flight. That's what it was. So then he chartered a flight, and then he went around and talked to all the people that had just been cancelled. He said, I've got a plane. Do you want a ticket? And they were like, okay. And that was how he started Virgin, which I just thought was fantastic.
Branson line of all time. In an interview, he said, do you want to know how to become a millionaire? The answer is very simple. Start with a billion and buy an airline. You become a millionaire.
Yeah. Well, it must be hemorrhaging cash over the years, those sorts of businesses. But in terms of...
But the very point here about the commitment to excellence, if you will. Sorry, that's a little trite, but to commitment these people feel. I know this. I just know this. The most common shared belief among the elites is that if you stand still, you will fall behind. I mean, why don't you go enjoy his immense wealth? No, I'm into doing better and more. For these people, a lot of these people, money is just a measurement tool to speak to success they're achieving. But I'm just so phenomenally impressed by they look and they believe with every fiber of their body that if they stand still, basking whatever glory, whatever they're involved in, they will fall behind.
Right, right.
Phenomenal.
Right. But there is a certain level of confidence that we must have, whether that is blind confidence, almost sort of delusionary in a way. It's quite connected to faith in what you're doing and your vision. But I do think confidence, when that is combined with dedication, discipline, determination, focus, adaptability and resilience, and with a continual mindset of continual learning, though you eventually you're going to succeed. No matter how many times you fall, you will succeed eventually, because it's not that difficult. There are only a certain number of ways that you can fail before you become successful, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, a reality that a lot of people, that keeps a lot of us ordinary folks from reaching for the proverbial stars, And mind you, don't be reaching for the stars, only if you think you can actually get there and you can plot the course to get there. Otherwise, it's foolish. It's pointless daydreaming. I think that the people who, the confidence these people have, they have it, they feel it, they act on it, and absolutely continue to develop it every single step they take in pursuit of excellence or mastery. Failure. We talk about failure is never an option. Pretty much every one of these people that we behold, for good reasons, have failed before. Many of them failed often and spectacularly. But when they get up in the morning, they're not considering failure an option. And it's interesting, important to note, that when they fail, and again, they fail often and sometimes spectacularly, it's never because of a lack of genuine effort. Often you have these incredible failures by these future massively successful elite people, and it's, you dig into it and say, you know, the world just changed. And it may have been a great idea 25 years ahead of its time. For those of you watching, listening, let me confess that we have done that. We've come up with simple concepts 20 years ago, and we got laughed at, we got threatened with lawsuits, and today it's ordinary. Today's ordinary. We can whip ourselves with not sticking to it, but one of the great brains told us that we're going to get handcuffed for doing this. Location-based advertising. Really? We called that mad. We had a great title for that years ago, Mad Cow's Weight. But that's just another story for another time. What does a mad cow weigh? We developed a whole thing about location-based advertising. And quite frankly, one of the biggest supermarket chains in certainly the U.S. told me that they're going to prosecute me if I let people know they're running out of toilet paper. Hey, you must be running out of toilet paper. You really should come by the store, which, by the way, is two blocks on your left, says your text message, and toilet paper is on sale 20% off. I think it's the biggest supermarket chain in the country. They told me they're going to have me prosecuted for the incredible invasion of people's privacy. I said, we're getting all this data. We know the frequency of buying toilet paper. We know that Mr. Johnson, there must be running out. Let's tell him it's on sale and he happens to be driving a block from the store. Does that not make sense? Okay, well, try to drive two blocks without getting those now. But it's an amazing thing that people like this have the capacity and the discipline to move on. By the way, they are in fact resilient, without a doubt. They adopt they have resilience. But remember, they're still going to Mars. They just maximize their behaviors, adopting to the realities of today, and they anticipate pretty darn well. You know, doesn't mean, again, they don't start out with their hearts and minds and soul reaching for that galaxy over there, business, personal, whatever the hell it is. However, whatever they chose to do, ultimately they all end up having their feet firmly planted on terra firma. These people are not daydreamers.
Well, a very interesting conversation. I think to round it off, what do you think about self-sabotage and how that can affect your success in whatever it is, whether it's a sport or business or life? Because I was thinking a lot about that. I've been thinking a lot about that because your brain is an interesting element that, you know, if you think about it, we don't consciously use all of our brain all the time, and sometimes we can allow the subconscious brain to mess around with our outcomes based upon certain belief systems that we can regenerate or hold on to based upon our age, upbringing, environment, people around us, our inputs, our outputs, etc. And I was just, and I've been pondering this quite deeply the past sort of couple of days.
Self-sabotage, going backwards in terms of the extent to which we actually perform, and may the spirits forgive me for quoting Harvard, they're not my favorites these days. They're, Harvard is my rearview mirror by some decades, but I think it's they conducted a survey, which is an unusual survey. They went out and interviewed some 75 of top CEOs in top companies. You know, these were truly the elites in the business world. And one of the questions they asked was, what do you think your degree of performance is day to day compared to your ability or your capacity? Shockingly, these people who by all measures are very, are performance elite. They're very successful. They're incredibly driven. You know, when the CEO of that Fortune 20 plays golf, it's business golf. And when he quit his job, he quit it because he realized he had three kids in college and didn't remember going to any of the high school graduations. But they are true hardcore committed performers. You know what the average was? They quoted, they thought that if they performed at 70% of their ability, they were really knocking it down. Think about that. Those people think that, and when they're really performing, maximum turbo boost, Formula One, jumping off glaciers, they're performing at 70% ability. Where does that leave us? That leaves us performing at 30, 40% of what we could do. But we don't. Why don't we? Well, back to your ability to self-assess, your ability to then go ahead and maniacally perform that, to learn, to study. And then you might push that 30. I believe we perform at 40%. I think that when I'm humming on 12 cylinders, I really cook in. I promise you, at the end of that process, what the heck it is, job it is, whatever that piece of writing it is, when it's done and everyone says, good, we did a good job, I'm the unhappiest guy in the room. Because I know to certainty I could have done a lot better. And if I allow myself, you know, I'm like, can I rewrite this? Sorry, it was on yesterday. And I beat myself because I know I could do better. And I'm not sure how, but I do know I could do better. Self-sabotage is a reality for most people. You know, the whole soft stuff I talk about, I can't, I won't, maybe I will, I should, but all of that stuff, once again, we're back to Swiss cheese without the cheese. Okay? How many times in your career as a broadcaster, as a writer, my fourth career, or my third or second, whatever they are, when I talk about communications, it's a huge, massive topic. The great communicators tell me they don't know how they're doing it. They're not sure they're doing it right. They're going to do better. Oh, I had someone, we just did a great piece for a big business publisher. Okay,